Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Today we've got Dan Feen with us. Dan Feen is Chief Operating Officer at Marker Study Group. It's so good to have you join us today, Dan. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Absolute pleasure. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, cool. We've got a really interesting conversation ahead, and this is probably one of my favourite topics on the show, really. You know, it's about your career in the industry, which has been really interesting and exciting, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to get a lot hearing about your story. And, you know, how people can best get, you know, how people can best better their chances of success in the industry. But before we get into that conversation, it would be great if you could just give us a bit of background on, you know, what Marker Study provides as a service.
Yeah, sure. So Marker Study was founded in 2001. We're known for our investments in technology, underwriting expertise, and sophisticated product development. But it's been a really exciting journey. I've been here for 10 years, and in that time, we've grown very, very quickly in a relatively short space of time.
Wow, amazing, amazing. And then I want to, you know, get into the conversation about your career journey, really. So could you give us a bit of insight around that and kind of how you've navigated your career, if you've navigated it at all, actually?
I think that's an interesting point. I think, yeah, I've taken opportunities that have presented themselves. I mean, fundamentally, I've had a lifelong passion with technology.
Yeah.
So from a really early age, I cut my teeth writing computer programs on a ZX Spectrum.
Right,
okay. Out of magazines. And I think then, actually, you know, that's where my passion came from. And I really learned how to solve problems. I mean, very rarely did these programs work. And I probably spent twice as long trying to fix them as I did writing them originally. So, you know, one of my guiding principles has really been to challenge to improve. And I think I can really trace that back to when I was like a teenager and you know, spending endless hours in front of a Spectrum. But my career, really, if I break it down, has fallen into sort of three distinct phases.
Mm-hmm.
So the first phase, I went to university. I did study computer science. But when I came out of university, it was a recession in the early 90s. So I found myself, my first job was in insurance, which I've stayed for the last 30 years. And I worked my way up in the business. So I joined as a claims adjuster for an insurance company in London. And really, as part of that, I really learned how to be part of a team. Eventually, I became a team leader and then a claims manager. And it just got me used to how to work with people, get the best from people in really high pressurized operational environments. Then I had an opportunity, there was a large system project, and I had an opportunity to jump tracks and get into IT. So I joined I went right back to the beginning, and I became a trainee software developer. So that was really the second phase of my career, and I guess I spent 15 years or so in doing lots of different jobs in IT. So I went from testing and a test manager, and I became a software developer, a business analyst, a project manager. I really done the rounds, and that gave me a very good grounding of kind of the craft of IT and an appreciation for all the different technical roles. And then finally, the third phase was really breaking into kind of what you'd probably class as a leadership role. And yeah, this is where, you know, I found myself having the, you know, ultimate accountability for technical decisions, which initially is quite scary. But really, it's enabled me to join all the dots of all the different jobs I've done in the past all together. So, but I can really trace it right the way back to, you know, I guess being a teenager cutting code on a little ZX Spectrum.
And there's so much that I want to pick up from what you were just saying there. And there was a couple of words that stuck out to me, which I want to touch upon, which you mentioned challenge and improve. I'm just wondering if that's a mantra that you still stick by.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. So I think actually a lot of software people are like this. We're constantly looking to see if there's a better way, if there's a more efficient way. and not accepting the status quo. So I've broadened that principle really now. So I look at quite holistically across the whole organization to see, you know, if you can optimize customer journeys or, but fundamentally, yes, it's stuck with me. So I'm always, even, you know, when I'm with my kids and that, I'm always, it's always, yeah, looking to make things better, even marginal gains, which I know is cited quite a lot in sports coaching, make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's one thing that I've realized by, you know, being on this podcast, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people in tech and a lot of them follow the idea that you should never be constrained by the technology that's available.
Yeah. I mean, the technology is really just, it is just the vehicle. It's just the enabler. There may be some kind of niche exceptions to that where the tech can kind of trigger the change. But in the main, you're absolutely right. It's about the people. It's about the problem. So I draw a lot of kind of inspiration from different markets, different people, just seeing patterns in behavior and then looking to build upon ideas, as I say. So a lot of my inspiration and thoughts does come from different fields outside of the financial sector.
Right. And what kind of fields is that then, would you say?
Numerous. So, I love my sport. So I'm fascinated, you know, I think, elite sports people and teams, you know, they are really on the cutting edge, you know, not just in terms of how they get the most out of themselves, but their use of technology, their use of data.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty key. And, you know, what I really like about sports in particular is they've got a very clear vision. They know, often with business, it can be quite difficult to translate to just having a single vision. And that is really important. I think if you know exactly where you're going, it's much easier then to then shape your processes and then ultimately the technology that you're going to use. But yeah, I would say my number one inspiration is sports, but then it can be anything. Science is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I can give you a really off the wall example.
Yeah, so, go for it.
Probably about 4 or 5 years ago now, so well before the pandemic, I read an article about Pepsi, and they were trying to bring together cultures. So they put a Coke machine in a town square in Pakistan with a video camera, and they put a sister Coke machine in India and encouraged people to dance in front of it. And then people from the two different Coke machines could see each other. And so we took that idea thinking, oh, great to bring together cultures, in different walks of life. And we'd done a similar thing. We put cameras in our breakout rooms in two locations.
Oh, amazing.
Across the UK. So when people were going in to make tea and coffee, they could see their colleagues in another office up, 300 miles away in another part of the country. And that simple thing actually really brought together, you know, teams in a way that they wouldn't normally get, you know, and I could hear people gossiping with each other So again, so that inspiration came from, you know, completely different, you know, sector.
That's incredible.
Just to take that idea, build on it, and then actually here we are today kind of trying to put the pandemic behind us. And yet that kind of technology now we're embracing, but, you know, we were trying to do stuff with it 4 or 5 years ago.
I absolutely love that idea. I mean, that's great. You know, that's amazing. And it just goes to show inspiration can come from literally anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then also what's good is because, you know, when you work with, you know, highly talented technical people, they do need kind of off the wall challenges to kind of, you know, test their gray matter. So to set a little problem to solve, like, right, how we're going to connect our break rooms using video conferencing, you know, it's a bit off the wall. It's not like a normal project. And yeah, you can get some really good innovation off the back of that. And often what I found is if you let people start using their imagination and create the freedom, you know, they take what was quite a simple idea and they can make it quite amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to people again, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
And who you employ and the mindset of the business, it all comes into it. And the leaders that are at the top of the business, you know, it all trickles down. And on that point, are there any particular leaders that inspire you, that you're inspired by?
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about this. There's probably three that I would say. As I've mentioned, I get a lot of inspiration from kind of elite sports people and coaches. Yeah. But if I was to choose, there's probably three. So there's a guy called Bill Walsh. So he was sadly he's not with us, but he was the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers.
Right. Okay.
Back in the 80s, and there's an excellent book called The Score Will Look After Itself, and really from cover to cover, it's packed full of excellent kind of advice for leaders. But when you look at all of the successful sports teams in the recent era, you can trace a lot of their fundamental ideas back to Bill Walsh. So for me, probably once a year, I'll go back to that book, I'll read it, reread, you know, cover to cover. I find it very inspirational. The second person that, really left a lasting impact with me was Chris Hadfield. So he was the first captain of the space station. So he's a Canadian astronaut. And I saw him do a keynote speech at a Gartner conference. Probably the most inspirational keynote speaker I've ever seen. I mean, obviously he's an astronaut, so it's, it's a pretty cool job. But he had a few kind of maxims that stuck with me. So he talked about focusing on when they set the space shuttle up, they were really going through, right, what's going to kill us next? And that kind of expression about how to prioritize what to work on, we use a lot. I keep using that. Okay, when there's a lot of chaos going on at work, we say, right, okay, what's going to kill us next? The other quote that he said that stuck with me was, there's no problem in space that you can't make worse. So, i.e., when things are going wrong, particularly in IT, if you're not careful, you can make the situation significantly worse. So he was a very, very, he is a very inspirational person. And then finally, the last one, probably a bit more traditional, is a guy called Marshall Goldsmith, who I think was voted the number one leadership coach in the world at one point. Again, I've seen him speak, and he's written many books. They're very, I'd recommend his books to anyone that's kind of aspiring in leadership. But he talks about how to make a lasting positive difference.
Right.
And again, that stuck with me. It's not just about kind of turning up every day. It is about thinking about how can you make a positive difference, mm-hmm. and, what is your legacy going to be, and kind of trying to extract the most out of yourself. So yeah. I think those three are probably the gurus that I would... I'll go back to, as I say, at least once a year, I'll read their, reread their material because, I find them very inspiring.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, you mentioned that they've all got books that are out. And is that your main resource where you learn about leadership through reading? Or is there other areas like podcasts or some people... YouTube, and you mentioned Gartner at one point. So where else do you look for resources, or is it just books? And
No. So I do read a lot. I do. I'm a bit of a bookworm, but then I will, all of the social media channels I do dip into. I've set up Google Alerts with certain search terms that I'm either if I'm writing about or I'm researching. So I do scan the net for, technical research papers and stuff. Gartner's a rich vein of information. We're lucky at Market Study, we're part of their executive program. So, and their research material, is excellent. But then, I think, I'm lucky I've got a good network of people, some really good partners that I learn a lot from. I learn a lot from my team. I've got a very highly skilled team. I'm sure it's a lot of people say this is probably a bit of a cliche, but there's not really a day that goes by that I don't learn something from my team. It's a kind of combination. I feel like sometimes it's like a melting pot and I just draw in from lots of different sources. So at the moment I'm doing a lot of reading around kind of artificial intelligence and the pros and cons and behavioral insights. So it's quite technical, but then I'll soften that by seeing what's going on in the market, speak to partners.
Yeah, excellent. And you mentioned you learn from your team every day. And I was just curious to find out whether, there's this common phrase that people use nowadays, that leaders use, which is they never like to be the smartest person in the room. Is that a philosophy you stick
by
too?
I think I naturally fall into that. I don't think I have to try at that. I think, yeah, I'm just very fortunate. The people I work alongside are just, they're just very, very clever. So, yeah. And then especially when you get into kind of data science fields and stuff, and you find out people kind of got, they're mathematicians, and so I would say I'm a generalist. I've had a varied career, and so I've got a good appreciation of all the elements, but I'm not a master particularly in any one of those. Where I do work with a lot of masters.
Yeah, perfect. And rumor has it, or I've done a bit of research, that you've worked on a keynote for Gartner as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I did. Our keynote, they had a CIO leadership forum in London where they hold it every year. And so, yeah, I was a keynote speaker at one of their events, yeah, which obviously is one of the highlights of my career, yeah.
Yeah, how does that come about then? Do you just get like a phone call, or how does it work?
Well, I mean, I think in part because, I think because I am quite passionate, and hopefully that comes across a little bit. So, and I think there's a number of events. So we obviously work with Gartner, so they were aware of some of our work. Mm. But we completely reimagined our IT function at Market Study. So, when I originally joined 10 years ago, it was a traditional group IT function. And then probably about 4 or 5 years in, we'd done a lot of acquisitions and stuff, and we knew that there was something missing. So we completely rebranded our function. So we went from being group IT to empowered, because we felt that it was all about empowering our staff and empowering our customers. And literally, we set out a new philosophy for what we wanted to know. We redefined our performance standards. We started to target industry awards. So in 2016, we were awarded probably our best accolade. The best digital product for in EMEA for Gartner. So as voted by their peers, we also won 5 Celent Model Insurer Awards, which I think is unparalleled. I don't think any other insurers has won that many awards. Yeah. So I think we got on the Gartner radar for some of the innovation that we were doing, but not necessarily just the technical innovation, but how we were trying to evolve our culture, how we were using other kind of levers to kind of maximize our performance. So there was a story there to be told. So I think they were quite keen for me to then kind of replay that at the symposium. And so that's how that came about, really.
Amazing. You mentioned like a few amazing achievements there. Would you say that you have one particular greatest achievement in your whole entire career that you can pinpoint? I mean, that's a big question, but...
Probably not. Well, the thing is that, against the old sport age, you're only as good as your last match. So, I mean, in terms of, awards, because, I would say probably winning 5 Celent Model Insurer Awards is pretty special. I mean, that is pretty. I mean, we won 4 in a row, 4 in a row. You know, as a result of that, I did get to 2 of the awards we collected in New York, which was quite special.
Wow.
I mean, the Gartner Award was very special because that was voted by people at the event. So it was voted by the peers. So that was, really an independent and sort of true reflection of, where we'd got to in terms of performance levels. I mean, in terms of projects and technical achievements, there's been numerous. I mean, I think more recently we've done a large acquisition of the co-op insurance, and that was very technically challenging. It was a 2-year program. We migrated from old legacy systems to our new systems, in a traditional kind of big bang. So we used old school IT to overcome a business problem, and I think for me that was probably the proudest moment, because that was executed with military precision, and we really did make the improbable possible.
Wow.
So the awards are good. And I think they are sort of good recognition. They're good for the team as well. I think it's good for the people that, you know, that work tirelessly behind the scenes that people don't see. It's good recognition for, but we've done some really big projects, which I think we can be really proud of as well.
Yeah, perfect. And I found that a lot of people that work in the technology space of traditional kind of sectors, they kind of see themselves as a tech business now that does, say, insurance or that does banking, for example, rather than a banking business that does technology as well. Is that what it's like for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've always been a technology company, and we've got some very charismatic leaders at Mark Study. I mean, they definitely invested heavily in technology. They've afforded me a lot of freedom, which, you know, so you have to have the right culture for that kind of technology-led business to occur. I mean, I have seen over the last 10 years a definite shift, and it probably is across the industry, but probably more so in our entrepreneurial environment, where actually, yeah, the business are kind of technologists. So actually the way that we go about doing acquisitions and the way that we go about growth, you know, organically growing is kind of, it is based around technology. I'd probably go to say that we're evolving into a data company.
Right, okay.
So I think the technology is ubiquitous to how we do our business. There's probably not a difference, but I can see that there's definitely a trend where we now starting to really fully understand the value of our data and how we can kind of make more intelligent business decisions.
It kind of seems to me that some of the traditional industries have been quite slow on the uptake with new technology, but it seems that they're kind of catching up nowadays. And, you know, there's a couple of questions there. Is one, do you think that's true? And if so, why?
Well, I think the barriers to technology have reduced. So, you know, again, 10 years ago, you needed quite deep pockets. You know, you really had to build your own data centers, and, you know, there was, you had to have a lot of cash up front, whereas now you can consume it all in the cloud. So that has really lowered the barriers to entry. And actually a lot of new startup companies and new, you know, newer insurers can jump straight to that technology base. So they can actually start on the cutting edge, you know, more operation, OPEX costs rather than upfront capital costs. I think some of the, and perversely, some of the very large organizations may be hindered by their kind of old systems, because, you know, it is difficult to get off of those.
Yeah.
So they're having to have a hybrid environment where they can have a blend of, you know, some of the more modern, you know, I mean, everyone kind of aspires to having enterprise agility where you can, you know, you just need to look at, you know, the terrible consequences of the pandemic. But from a business point of view, you know, businesses had to mobilize very quickly, a completely different operating model. So those that had access to some newer technologies were able to mobilize very quickly. And some of the more established organizations struggled because, you know, they couldn't send people to work. So that really kind of highlights, you know, the problems that probably exist in the industry. I mean, we were quite lucky in that regard. So we were able, I mean, we had our 4,000 staff working from home within a week.
Wow, that's incredible.
But that was mainly because we were very acquisitional. We'd already kind of, you know, invested heavily in, you know, secure cloud-based technologies that can scale really quickly. I don't think we ever envisaged that we would need to send everyone and work from home.
Yeah.
But it was designed in a way that we could onboard companies very quickly. So, but I do think the barriers are coming down, and I think it will be important going forwards. It will be necessary for the survival of some of these companies, because as consumers, our standards, our expectations are much higher now. You know, the benchmark, we do look at the likes of, you know, Amazon and eBay and all these types of places that we use every day in our life. I mean, even the banking industry is really pushed on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some interesting research that I was reading the other day. I think it was from McKinsey, and they were saying that the average customer only contacts their insurer 4 times a year, whereas with a bank, it's 100 plus contacts a year.
Yeah.
So you think if you're only contacting a company 4 times, each of those interactions has to be world class.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to have a really low opinion. So the experience has to be immersive, and, you know, so something has to change in that space for insurance to keep up with the kind of consumer led demands, I think.
Yeah, it's difficult. It must be a challenging industry because, you know, if you're having to push and stay ahead of the curve, you know, create something new, basically, it must be a really difficult industry to work in. Do you feel that, or do you just, is your mindset always, has always been to push the...
Yeah, well, it comes back to the challenge to improve. So I think my mindset has always been to, has been to push, but it is constant. It is constant. And there's, you know, it is, you know, any business leader, but I think particularly kind of technology leaders, it is quite difficult because you've got many different areas that you one need to push in, but also, you know, so on the one arm, you know, all your systems need to be really scalable. They need to be highly resilient. You know, people expect systems to work all day, every day, and they're immensely complicated. And you've got, you know, there's lots of moving parts, and you know, any one thing can fail that brings the whole the stack down. Then they have to be very secure, and it's a constant cat and mouse game with, you know, cyber threats. So that's you know, another big area that you need to be focused on. Then there's all the innovation stuff, and the emerging technologies such as, you know, the Internet of Things and connected devices and blockchain and cryptocurrencies, all this kind of stuff. So there's lots to occupy your mind, and having a clear vision is, you know, can be quite a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many moving parts, especially in this industry. And I've got a couple more questions for you here, Dan. We mentioned earlier the greatest achievement of yours, but has there been any kind of challenges throughout your career that you've had to get over?
Yeah, I mean, I think with every, you know, some of the really big programs of work, they do sometimes balance on a knife edge.
Mm.
So, you know, my greatest achievement was almost nearly my worst failure, you know, and we've had occasions where, you know, we've had, critical failures in a data center where, you know, it looks irreversible and, you know, literally things balance on a knife edge. And if events don't go your way, then, you know, the outcome could be very different. So I think I've had a number of events throughout my 30-year career where, and I used to say that they come along every 7 years. So there's a kind of a 7-year cycle. But when you have to dig in really deep and you have to be really resilient, it'd be very easy just to, you know, throw the towel in. Sometimes they're really technical challenges. Sometimes it might be that, you know, we've had a few, you know, people issues because, your team is constantly evolving and you might lose a few key people just at the wrong time. And, you know, you're finding yourself building up a new team whilst also kind of going to war on a big program. So, I've had a few. But then I've learned a few things along the way that, you know, problem shared is a problem halved.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of a key one for me. And I think in my darkest hour, I've realized that you're surrounded by very good people and, you know, often your partners and suppliers, if you engage them in the right way, you can really come to your rescue.
Yeah, totally. That's really, really interesting. Well, Dan, I think that might wrap us up today, but, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I've really, really enjoyed it. So I really appreciate it. I can't wait to put this one out on the channel.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, likewise. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.